You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. Every year on 22nd of April, we celebrate Earth Day. And of course, this year is no different. The focus is not just on sustainability, but a sustainability in a process where we're still trying to grasp a post-pandemic world. Just like some of the mega trends following the pandemic, sustainability is one of the three pillars that a lot of people are thinking about of re-engineering it, including that of education as well as healthcare. So joining me today is the Associate Director of Maybank IB Research or Maybank Investment Bank, TJ Liao. TJ, of course, is a forefront runner in terms of an analyst in trying to decode the electric vehicle business in Malaysia as well as in ASEAN. Of course, that would be some of the key features that we need to talk about today. TJ, thanks for coming on the show. Let's talk a little bit more about the EV penetration rate of Malaysia and ASEAN, where we stand, and perhaps what kind of scenarios that we're looking at in the near term.
Okay, thanks, Ibrahim. If you were to look at the EV penetration, even globally, we are still at a very embryonic stage. So penetration globally is basically about 4% now. Mm. But if you were to look at ASEAN alone, it's practically below 1%. So in a way, we are still not far off in terms of competing against the world in terms of EV penetration. Mm. So this is where EV comes in interesting. In a way, it could really spark interest. You could really transform the whole transportation system, brings a whole new economy. And if you were to look at how EV transformed the lives, in a sense that a lot of factors are driving towards electrification. First of all, climate change, decarbonization agendas, countries' emission targets, stricter regulations, all these leads to practically moving towards the electrification process. Mm. And from that itself, if emission targets, when it becomes more stringent, and if you were to be impose penalty if you don't meet it, so this is where the automakers worldwide are changing their mindsets in terms of moving from ICE or internal combustion engines to electrification. So this is one of the ways to circumvent getting penalized. And most of their products now, if you were to look at it globally, they are moving towards electrification. So government policy, as clear-cut from what we've seen so far, are moving towards that. They are strategically phasing out ICE or internal combustion engines towards electrification. So based on our study, about one-third of the world have adopted that policies, which accounts about more than 80% of the global sales worldwide. And that is the case. We think that the penetration will be accelerating, currently about 4%. We think that by 2025 could potentially go to 20%. In 10 years' time, 2030, of every cars that you have, I think every one out of one EVs will be equivalent to one combustion engine.
That's rather optimistic of you. Very recently, we had your colleague over, Anand, talking about the ESG compendium that the Maybank IB Research publishes. On one of the key items that he raised was, of course, the overarching blueprint strategy for Malaysia when it comes to creating a low carbon economy. It seems to be missing in terms of where we are heading at, but there are some sort of a blueprint involved, including that of the low carbon mobility blueprint 2021 until 2030. How impactful is this low carbon mobility blueprint when it comes to creating a low carbon economy?
Okay, we skimmed through that report, that blueprint. I think we see some positives in it. I think it offers basically, if you were to take it from an analyst point of view, what the action plans that they have there, we could see that it basically offers a view or a precursor to Malaysia's EV policies, which was something missing, which was missing back in 2020 when NAP 2020 was introduced. So many were left disappointed, but with this blueprint yet to be a policy, but we could see that I think Malaysia is moving forward towards that. So having a policy is a good thing. It's definitely a good thing for a start. But to have a forward-looking EV policy, I think that would be better. because with a forward-looking one, because OEMs, automotive OEMs, are just waiting for signals or investments, opportunities to come to this ASEAN space or Malaysia in particular. So when we have a very clear-cut EV policy, these companies will basically approach us either to set up facilities, plants, or to bring electrification. And that will basically be, I would say earlier on, a new economy to the whole system.
Your research house published a report prior to doing this interview talking about EVs going to be outselling internal combustion engine vehicles by 2035. A lot of people are saying this is a bold statement. Other people are saying that this is common sense. They're just stating the obvious. They, meaning Maybank IB Research. So which one is it? Do you think this is a common sense thing that everybody is going to have to accept? Or, wow, such a bold kind of thing that that we all have to, you know, sit down and breathe deeply because what you're saying is something bold?
So this is something that we have to be very forward-looking in a way to see what's going to happen in 10 years' time or 15 years' time. So based on the country's policies in terms of road transportation electrification, everybody or every country worldwide are facing out combustion engines. That is one. Emission targets are being raised. And if you were to look at it, that's where we came out with the analysis. If these countries, XXX, were to phase out combustion engines and move towards electrification, how would that penetration go about? So that is how we came about with a 50-50 ICE and electrification by 2030. And also that 2035 onwards, EVs will basically take over ICE. And if you were to look at it, automakers worldwide are basically discontinuing the ICE developments and moving more towards their investment or capex towards electrification.
Yeah, everyone. We're talking about the big guys, Toyota, Honda, you name it, including the continental makers. They are all there as well. We're talking about Tesla, who is going to make inroads in ASEAN through Indonesia. We're talking about all the other players now encroaching Malaysia. Do you feel that Malaysia, because of our long history, storied history in terms of making our own cars, do we have what it takes to now embrace the second revolution of vehicles, which is electric? Where do we stand in terms of that?
Well, I'm always an optimist on this. If you were to look at it, Tesla, I think, has yet to set up any base in the ASEAN region. So if Malaysia were to formulate a very forward-looking, very progressive EV policy, so they'll probably get Elon Musk to basically stand up and basically approach us. So if we were to provide the right incentives and all the right approaches, infrastructures, all the ready-made electrifications, I think a lot of countries or a lot of approaches are there for us to basically tap on, because like I said earlier, we are still at a very early stage of adoption of EVs.
What would be some of the items that, you know, would be interesting to attract investors or companies like Tesla?
Okay, for example, first of all, we need to have an EV policy, okay? A very strong one that sends a signal that, okay, we are going to basically move towards electrification. We're going to set a target in terms of when are we going to phase out combustion engines for away. Then thirdly, what sort of incentives that we can offer to, for example, like Tesla or Elon Musk to set up a gigafactory in Malaysia. I think that will basically give them, give us a fighting chance in terms of attracting all these EV manufacturing facilities, because EVs is basically beyond manufacturing of cars. It comprises a lot more things.
Industry of industries, yes, they say.
Yes, correct.
I'm surprised that the low carbon mobility blueprint doesn't have all these items.
Well, I think the low carbon mobility remains a blueprint. But I believe that if you were to look at all the EV policies around the world, in the countries, these policies are not static. It is always upgraded, formulated with better things. For example, like Singapore, when they first started with their EV policy recently, I think they only had about 28,000 charging stations. But recently, they basically upped their targets to 60,000. For example, Thailand wanted to become an ASEAN EV hub by 2030. But I think that was revised. It was basically forwarded to 2025. So if Malaysia were to have that, I think having a progressive, very sound EV policies, I think that will probably set us apart. And if we could, if Malaysia as a whole can practically electrify our road transportation system, i.e. improve penetration in terms of EV vehicles versus the ASEAN countries, I think that's a good start.
What's stopping us from doing it?
Policy, infrastructure, incentives.
All revolves around the political argument. Do you feel that because of the political situation in this country right now, it's going to be hard to achieve those kind of items, policy incentives and the likes?
I wouldn't say so, because decarbonisation is a worldwide agenda, and low carbon mobility is one of the ways to go. And electrification fits perfectly into that case, be it whether you are a fossil player or not, because at the end of the day, everybody will be looking at decarbonisation or trying to set a carbon neutral targets for countries or for corporates alone.
Let's talk a little bit more about adoption from the market. I've been thinking about this for quite a bit. Attacking the retail segment would be, I guess, natural for a lot of consumer type companies, like an automotive company. But another point of entry is commercial vehicles. You know, you think about big companies like IKEA, like Giant, Jaijesco, you know, or Tesco. They have fleets that require a lot of, I guess, investment. Do you feel that these big companies would probably benefit from trying to buy EV trucks, for instance? Would that be a way in to grow market penetration rate for EVs?
Yes, I believe that electrification is for everybody. In fact, all these, like you rightly pointed out, they are just waiting for the government signals to basically bring all this in, because with electrification, it basically improves efficiencies, it improves costs, and basically when you try to electrify, it also helps with the ESG and decarbonisation agenda. So it helps with the whole ecosystem. And if you were to provide incentive, I think this thing will basically boom overnight.
What kind of incentives are you talking about?
Well, if you were to provide infrastructure readiness, i.e. you build EV charging networks, I think that is something like your pump stations. Mm. So if government were to provide, for example, grants, matching grants, so I think a lot of private initiatives will basically come up and basically set it up, because with all these things, EV cars will sell. And when we have all those incentives, those automotive OEMs will basically also ride along the way, because with having proper EV infrastructure, they are able to sell their car, something that is missing in Malaysia for now in terms of selling EVs or electric cars. So most of our cars right now are basically combustion engines. So these are basically a new segment. So like I mentioned earlier on, all the automotive operators are moving towards electrification. So in terms of models, pipelines, I think there'll be more of EVs down the road. In 5 years' time, there'll be more than 400 EV equivalent models for you to choose from.
Mm, hitting all the price points that is suitable to you. Let's talk a little bit more about the stakeholders here. I'm thinking of Tenaga Nasional Berhad. I'm also thinking about all the petrol stations out there and their parent companies, from PETDAG to Shell Distribution, all that. What's in it for them to make sure that they are equipped in terms of charging stations, making sure that, you know, when somebody goes to the pump, it's no longer, you know, lead unlead, it's now lead 95. Unleaded 95, unleaded 97. Moving forward, we can have unleaded petrol, diesel, and then maybe an electric point. What's stopping these companies from, I guess, adopting this, other than the policy and all that? Do you feel that they can move ahead without the policies?
Oh, yes, they can. I think, but with policy, basically, it's going to supercharge the growth. But having said that, I think all the petrol stations are moving forward to that. Shell, for example, Caltex, and also Petronas Dagangan or Petronas stations. But I think once we have better sound bites from the policy makers, I think the adoption will basically be strong going forward. And if you were to look at it, by having all these charging points, it's also part of the point for them to monetize. And if you were to look forward, I think when you do charging, basically you have convenience stores, and basically it basically improved the ecosystem of the petrol kiosks along the way.
Let's go back to the statement that you guys came out, which is EV penetration starting at 4% last year and is set to grow 5 times or 20% by 2025. And you say that this is significant because this is an addressing a market, addressable market of 40 million units for the four-wheel segment and 220 million units for the two-wheels segment. And in terms of Indonesia, Thailand, and Vietnam, and of course Malaysia, the two-wheel segment is of course huge with over 220 million market. Do you think that owners, individual owners, have to move ahead with or without a policy? Do you think that the policy is nice to have, and when it comes, it comes, but individuals must start to think about you know, getting a two-wheel vehicle, say for instance an EV vehicle. Where do we stand on this?
So in terms of penetration, we believe that even without a policy, electric two-wheelers will basically move ahead of their four-wheelers. Why? Because there's already a proven technology for two-wheelers, i.e. battery swaps. So the issues with EVs most of the time will be range anxiety issues, and also availability of charging points. So what two-wheelers offers now that we have seen, like your likes of Gogoro in Taiwan, and you have Oika that has basically set up base in Southeast Asia, they offer technology whereby scooters or motorbikes are basically equipped with battery swaps. So those battery swap stations are like your convenience store, your ATM machines. You can basically put them anywhere. So range anxiety, no issue. Space, also not an issue. And in terms of cost of ownership for these two-wheelers, the future forward, you don't have to practically own it. You can basically lease it. And in terms of leasing, in terms of cost of ownership, it basically brings down your cost per asset per se. So we believe that two-wheelers of electrification works very well in the Southeast Asian market, and we have seen that being adopted in Cambodia. Indonesia is coming up. Indonesia has the biggest two-wheelers market in ASEAN, and soon I think the world will basically be looking at that. But and also recently, or not so recent, all the big automakers have formed up a group to basically formalize a battery swap standardized thing. So going forward, I think two-wheelers sort of battery swaps will probably become a mainstream.
What is the reality of ASEAN countries coming together and provide a cohesive policy that addresses things like standardization of battery swaps, standardization of wattage and voltage of charging centers in and around this massive location that we're talking about with 700 million population? When individually we are all starting from different places, Malaysia, for instance, doesn't have an EV policy just yet. Is there room and space for us to see all these ASEAN countries collectively coming together and say, you know what, let's build an EV policy together for the benefit of the region?
Yeah, I believe that would be probably maybe a good start for the region per se. But if you were to look at all the policies that they have, these are basically touching on policies, incentive, as well as infrastructures. So the infrastructure we are looking at probably will be the most common, will be the EV charging stations. So the more you put on, I think it will basically improve adoption. So in Norway, for example, for every 50 km of travel range, there will be an EV station, EV charging stations. Whereas for EIA, they have basically addressed that for every 10 EV cars, we have one charging station. So Malaysia, in the blueprint itself, it mentions that for every 100 km, there'll be a charging stations along the way. And basically 100 km, you could basically electrify the whole network of highways in Malaysia. So if that's the case, range is no longer an issue, right? And if you were to look at, if you were to incentivize those electricity from those charging points, I think EV is the way to go.
Moving moving away from regulation, policy, and governance, let's talk a little bit more about the two big car operators in this country, Produa and Proton. Very recently, there's a report by M Investment that I read this morning. I was talking about the market share still more than 50% between these two cars or makers. Do you feel that they have the opportunity to seize on this and start to develop their own EV vehicles very soon?
I think that process has started. Produa has collaborated with Daihatsu to come up with their electrification plans to roll out future electrification models. That's one. Whereas for Proton, they have this partnership with Geely. And Geely has Link & Co. And they're also coming up, Geely also can come up with their Zeekr model. So in terms of product pipeline readiness, in terms of electric cars, Geely has it. And with Geely and Proton partnership in Malaysia, that will be the case. And if you were to look at it, China, Malaysia, I think there's a lot of opportunities that could be tapped on. If you were to look at the electric vehicles, basically China is at the forefront now. They have they have rolled out so many notable names like your BYD, Xpeng. So these companies are pure EV players. So we have been looking east in the past, i.e. attracting Japanese players or Japanese OEMs to basically come and invest. So why not bring those Chinese guys? Because the thing is that ASEAN practically is a right-hand market, whereas China is left-hand. So there will be a sweet spot opportunity for us to basically bring them in, because their cars are comparable, if not better.
Final question is on final topic or areas is on money and investment. Where do we stand in terms of investor appetite in financing this segment?
I think it's a big thing. Private initiative, probably what they request are basically matching grants for a start, or probably tax rebates. So governments, to accelerate that, they probably give those tax incentives for early adopters. So in the blueprint itself, it says that 10,000 tax-free EV CBU vehicles to be given out. But I believe that 10,000, I hope to be one of the 10,000, because the take-up rate will be very, very strong. And they say that it will only be up to 2022 or 2023. So if Malaysians per se were to take that up within months or finish the allocation, I think it drives a signal to the government that Malaysia is ready, or in fact, Malaysia wants electrification. So then that, like I said, your policies could be improved.
What about the private segment, PE, VC? Do you think they're very much interested in this segment?
Oh, they are. Everybody is interested in that because it forms part of their ESG decarbonization agenda and also improve efficiencies along the way. So these are the key things that they're looking at.
What about fund managers? We're talking about BlackRock, PNB, EPF, Coop. Do they have that activist investor role in trying to demand more from companies? Say, for instance, DRB and all that. Do you think that they have a role to play as well in this?
Oh yes, they are. I think if you were to look at it, ESG is becoming a mainstream, decarbonization. So they'll probably look for companies that basically fit into those criteria in a way. So FTSE for good and all these things. So this is another new segment, going green, going clean, and companies that can decarbonize fast or meet their carbon neutral agenda, or basically being a net zero. I think these are the companies they will be investing on in future. And if they offer growth, I mean, those are the best of both worlds.
See, in a post-pandemic world, we're really thinking about mobility outright. It's very rare we get friends that will probably be able to work from home to come to the office. Even in this organization, we're trying to limit people coming here. And that seems to be the way forward because of the appetite to garner lower mobility, transportation in a post-pandemic world. Where would vehicles, whether or not it's internal combustion engines or electric vehicles, where do this kind of industry stand? Do we see a bright future for this industry?
Oh yes, I personally do. Because to me, EV is beyond a car. electric vehicles, you can do V2H, vehicle to homes, V2G, vehicle to grid. You can basically electrify your house or basically sell to the grid. Or you can do P2P trading, i.e. Two cars can basically share batteries and all these things. But what is more important is that as we go electrification, I think something that we have missed out is the millennials' sort of contributions. And if you look at that, those are our future consumers. And they have this mindset that they are very environmentally conscious. So EV fits into their lifestyle. I'm surprised that even my kids are telling me that you should basically get electric cars. It saves the world, no pollution. At least the roads are more safer or cleaner. So things are changing.
Fantastic. This is an item that I want to touch on before we end this show, which is, of course, what can consumers do? It is Earth Day. We're talking about bringing a collective consciousness towards people into how we can make this a more sustainable and living planet that we can actually thrive on. It is clear that we are the one that is destroying it. Pathogens like the COVID-19 virus is going to come up every now and then. It's not going to go away permanently. Where do we stand moving forward in terms of being, a good caretaker for this planet?
I think if we were to reduce emission, adopting EVs versus combustion engines. Combustion engines, every liter you basically emit 2.6 kilogram of carbon dioxide. EVs, you don't, you see. So one of the ways to go forward is that.
Fantastic. That was a very interesting conversation. V2X also. I was coming up with this vehicle to everything.
V2X.
Yeah, that would be an interesting conversation to be had. After this, of course, that was our conversation with TJ Liao, the Associate Director of Maybank IB Research. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astroawani.com. There's plenty of interviews like this that can be found there. Also, if you've missed our big interview with Anand of Maybank IB Research talking about the ESG compendium, basically a big collection of companies and their ESG initiatives. You can also look for it on their website as well as on ours. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.